Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. How the male banana fly exerts a psychological effect on a female that completely kills her sex drive. You heard me right. And what makes a female zebra finch swoon? Yes, we examine what the sex lives of bugs, birds, and beasts tell us about evolution, biodiversity, and ourselves. That's later on this hour. First up today, the challenges facing today's public transportation systems. U.S. travel by public transportation soared last year to its highest level in nearly six decades. This week, public transportation industry experts from across the country are meeting in Kansas City at an event sponsored by the American Public Transportation Association. There's 1,000 folks in town for that gathering. With us today is Michael Malanafy. He's president and CEO of the American Public Transportation Association. And Michael, good to have you in Kansas City.
Great to be here, Steve. Welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Mark Huffer's back with us. He's the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority General Manager. And Mark, always good to have you too. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be back.
Well, recent study says that the driving boom is over in the United States. Do you buy that? Does that make sense to you, Michael?
What we're seeing is people want to have choices, Steve. They want to have a choice. It used to be binary. You either took transit or you took the bus. Now you can do both on the same day. You can ride transit on Monday, take a car on Tuesday, take a shared ride bike on Wednesday. People want choices.
People want choice, and you're seeing the driving boom maybe falter a little bit out there?
What we've seen since 1995 is population's grown by 20%. Vehicle miles traveled have gone up only 22%. But transit ridership up over 37%, almost double the population growth rate.
Mark, what do you make of that? What does that say to you?
Well, I think we're seeing the same thing in Kansas City. We've got strong ridership growth over the last couple of years. And one of the things that's very interesting is that our fastest growing demographic is the 20 to 35-year-old.
That's what you hear that they want to be having options to get around and not driving a car, right?
They're looking for choices. And I think I heard a study not too long ago that said millennials would rather have a cell phone than a car. They'll give up their car.
What's behind that? What do we know about the psychology of why younger folks want public transportation instead of driving their own car?
They don't want to waste their time in a car stuck in traffic. They want to have the opportunity to email, to text, to search the internet. And on public transportation, they have the ability to do that.
Michael, that's a huge paradigm shift in this country, isn't it?
We're seeing on both ends of the geological spectrum. We've got baby boomers that are coming back into downtown saying they don't want to drive as much. And millennials saying they want to have choices and they want to live in a green way and be able to socialize more closely.
Are we seeing this trend manifest itself even here in the heartland where we have lots of space, you know, more highway miles per capita here in Kansas City than I think any other city in the country? Are we seeing that even here in the Midwest?
Well, look at all the population that's coming back downtown. You have even more residences than businesses in some cases in the downtowns in the Midwest, and we're seeing a real population shift.
Yeah. Mark, you're seeing that too?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Kansas City is said, as I said, to have more freeway miles per capita than any other city in the country. Do you sense, Mark, that this notion that people love their cars, is that fading even in a city like Kansas City?
Well, I think you see that just in the growth of population downtown.
Yeah.
Downtown Council says now that we have almost 20,000 people living downtown. A decade ago, that was 4,000 people. So the fact that people are moving downtown means that they're willing to give up cars. They don't have to have a car, and they're riding public transportation.
You also wonder how much of this is economical, younger folks having trouble getting established in careers. We all know about that, and maybe the financial end of this is playing a factor too.
I'll just say I can tell you a personal example. My son just moved downtown, and he's 25, and he moved downtown because he wanted to be close to the action, and it was not a financial decision in his case.
That's interesting. Well, Michael, a few years ago, the big talk in Kansas City was all about light rail. Now it's about streetcars, which are cheaper to install. What I'm wondering is, again, looking at this from 10,000 feet high, is there yet another alternative on the horizon out there that might be even cheaper than streetcars that might come along in 5 or 10 years?
I think what you're seeing is that cities are flourishing by having a blend. You've got regular transit, you've got paratransit, you've got the BRT lines, and you're going to have streetcars, and those things complement each other. It used to be you'd have just one thing, and that wasn't always the best choice. Now having systems that complement each other makes for a more thriving city.
But there's no other public transportation mode that's on the horizon that's going to be the popular thing 5 or 10 years from now that you're aware of?
No, we went through a big light rail boom in the country, and now we're seeing a renaissance of streetcars that are coming back. They left 50 years ago across our nation, and now they're coming back. That's the renaissance that's happening now.
You used a phrase a minute ago, Michael, paratransit, or para was the prefix. What is that?
That's the complementary service that often helps mobility for people with mobility challenges move about their communities.
Yeah. Well, let me get our listeners involved here. What would it take for you to commute by public transit? Maybe you're doing it now. Maybe you like it a whole lot. We'd like to know what your reactions to that are. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. So far, we've been talking about the transportation needs, Mark, of younger folks. What's being done to address the needs of this aging population of baby boomers, of which I'm a proud card-carrying member these days?
Well, I think that's a challenge facing the whole industry.
As
our population ages, fewer and fewer people are going to want to drive, are going to be able to drive, and we're going to have to be able to meet that really specific demand. Michael talked about paratransit. That's one of the ways the communities are really starting to meet that need, by having more flexible options, door-to-door options, using smaller vehicles. Many of our aging population is not going to be moving downtown. They're still going to remain in suburban locations, and we've got to figure out how to be effective in those locations for individuals who can't drive.
It's amazing to me, Mark, the extent to which your industry is changing and trying to make what you guys do fit a population whose needs and wants, you know, shift all the time. That's got to be a pretty daunting challenge. How daunting is it?
Well, you know, Kansas City was built on a streetcar. You put the streetcar line down, and it was a grid system, and people just built houses and buildings and offices along the streetcar. Now, if they wanted to go build something out in a field, they do that, and it becomes much more difficult to be responsive to that as growth moves away from the central district. It becomes less dense, and we do that by offering a variety of choices, as Michael said, large vehicles, small vehicles. We have services that are call-in and demand responsive, and it's just a mix of options.
That's the voice of Mark Huffer. Again, he's the general manager of the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority. He's joined this morning by Michael Malanafee. He's a president and CEO of the American Public Transportation Association that's in town right now for a convention downtown. What does the Kansas City, just looking again at the Kansas City plan and the way we offer public transportation around here, Mark, what do we do right? What do we struggle to do well?
Well, I think we've got very good services and very good options in areas where the population is dense and the quarter's dense. South of the river, Kansas City, Missouri, I think we have very, very good service, and it's extremely well utilized.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't do well is the interjurisdictional services. It's hard to get from Lee's Summit to job opportunities in Johnson County.
I thought we were getting past that.
Well, one of the things we're trying to do to work on that is ATA and the Mid-America Regional Council recently formed the Regional Transit Coordinating Council, which is really designed to look at those regional issues and help us move forward. On that board of the RTCC are key elected officials and key policymakers. We have city managers and county managers and elected mayors. And with them speaking that voice and saying we need to move that forward, it's going to enable us to better coordinate our services with Johnson County Transit, with Independence Transit, with Unified Government Transit.
Yeah.
And we're trying to really create a seamless region for moving about on public transportation.
Michael, I gather this idea of crossing jurisdictional lines has to be a problem also in cities across the country. What do you see as you look across the U.S.?
We're seeing a much greater regionalization, Steve. Unlike police, fire, water, sewer, where you stop at city-county lines, people move about their communities across city-county and even here state lines on a regular basis. So we look at regionalizing our transit system so they reflect how people move about their communities.
You're seeing a lot more of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. We want to know what you think of public transportation. How often do you use it? What holds you back from using it more often? Let's go to some phone calls here. And Linister from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I think they're going to be ugly. The design is going to be not very nice. If Walt Disney
What's going to be ugly? Lynn, what are you talking about? Streetcars?
Streetcars. They're going to look like buses.
Mm-hmm.
They're ugly. Now, if Walt Disney designed it, they'd be very nice looking. Now, if you go to New Orleans, the streetcars are very nice looking. It's aesthetically, but no one's going to ride them because they're just, You see a bus go by with three people on them, big, huge, ugly buses. It's going to be the same thing with streetcars, big, ugly streetcars. No one's going to ride them because they're not going to look nice. That's my comment.
Yeah. Minister, thank you for the comment. How are they going to look? How attractive are they going to be, Mark Hoffer?
You know, that is a Kansas City, Missouri project, but we've been involved in it. What I can tell you is I don't think the designs have been finalized. There's a committee working on that. But the vehicles themselves, I think, will be very attractive. They have selected the manufacturer. It's different than the New Orleans streetcars, which are called a vintage car. They're supposed to look old. These are going to be modern, sleek. They're going to look similar to the monorail, as he mentioned, as the caller mentioned, in Disney World. And I think they will be very attractive.
What's the projection for ridership as you look? I know it's we only have the one leg that's being constructed right now, Mark. But in terms of numbers of people, give us a sense of what's being looked at there.
The initial alignment is, as you know, only 2 miles, 2.2 miles. It's from River Market to Union Station. And I believe, Steve, that the numbers project about 1,600 a day.
Okay, so that's a lot of folks.
It's a good number.
And then it obviously would increase once you expand the system outward. A couple elections on the ballot this year and could decide the future of all this.
Yeah, the city's already in planning for the future phases, which could include going all the way down to UMKC and a couple of east-west corridors. And you just build on that on the initial line and the initial ridership.
Michael, how do you go about, you know, predicting future public transportation needs? How do you guys look into the future and figure out where the systems in this country need to be 5 or 10 years down the road?
We look at employment nodes and where places of community involvement are, where you can go be grocery shopping or go into the theater or healthcare. You look for those employment nodes and where people are moving and moving to. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of redevelopment also in brownfield areas. Warehouse districts are coming back to be fun communities for people to live in.
Do you see a future, Michael, where you know people do begin to live along streetcar lines, along bus lines, and a more compact type of city going forward in the future? We're still spread out here in Kansas City, but do you see cities of the future being more compact than they are today?
Well, no question. We just did a study that looked at with the American Realtors Association, and we looked at housing stock since 2008, since the economic depression, along high-frequency transit corridors at six cities across the country. The housing stock along those high-frequency transit corridors performed 42% better. It was like having oceanfront property.
42% better. So people are going to be moving to those areas. It's a natural attraction.
You're able to have better access around your community. You can save money not having to have a second car and a family. And it gives you access to move about your community in an economically viable way.
We're talking about public transportation this morning on Up to Date. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Again, it's 816-235-2888. How often do you use public transportation? What's holding you back from using it more often? Back to some phone calls here. Kite from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Thank you, Steve. My comment is that the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance is working on extending our transit system, because what we need to do is to find ways to let people travel without having to use a car and parking spaces. What transit does is really change the way the city feels, the way the city works. That's why kids are moving to the urban center, because they'd like to move without having to park everywhere and without having the expense of owning and operating a car.
Hmm. Kite, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
You bet, Steve. Thanks for doing this.
You know, Michael, I'm wondering to what extent, you know, is the need for various methods of public transportation outstripping the means we have to pay for them? Because you do get that sense. There's a penny cent sales tax on the ballot in Missouri, or at least it's being contemplated right now for highway needs. We're looking at another penny here in Kansas City to extend the streetcar system in southern Kansas City. What about all that, our ability to pay for all this?
Having good public transportation is key to economic viability and economic competitiveness of a city. It's an investment you have to make. And as I meet mm-hmm. with mayors and governors all around the country, a top five question is, can I get my employees to work in a safe, reliable, dependable way every day? Mm-hmm. Making those investments allows your city to be competitive, to bring that tax base into your community. It's part of a bigger system. It's not just about getting people from A to B. It's about making your city work better.
But cities can't afford it anymore, though, can they? And the federal government isn't helping as much as it used to. All those dynamics are changing.
Well, it's a partnership. It takes the federal government. It takes oftentimes state governments involved, local government, and also the passengers as they pay their fares. It's a blend of all those things. If you want to have a world-class city, you have to have good transportation there.
But the fact the federal government is pulling back a little bit, what impact is that having on public transportation systems across this country?
Well, the last funding that came out, MAP 21, was actually a funding increase in public transportation funding for the federal government level. They changed some of the balance of the numbers, but there still needs to be an investment from the federal level, and we're seeing that. Certainly there are challenges on how to do it, but cities that have made those investments have seen economic development along their corridors and see their cities become more vibrant.
Mark, it's an issue in Kansas City, this drying up of federal funding. How's that affecting what you do here in town?
Well, I don't know that I'd say it's a drying up of federal funding. We continue to receive federal funding. Our biggest issue here really is that it tends to be flat. Our funding is flat. So as we try to grow the system, we don't have a strong revenue growth. But I think Michael's correct. You can't afford not to invest in public transit. And it's not just the other communities in the country that we're competing against. We're competing on a global stage. And mm-hmm. transit systems around the world are spectacular. And we've got to be able to compete against them if we're going to keep creative class and we're going to grow technology in our country.
Well, we've had some success locally, haven't we, Mark, in terms of that Tiger grant that we got for the streetcar system. Now we're in line for, I think, another one, trying to get one, competing with a whole host of cities, but it's tough.
We have. We've had very good success with Tiger. We had Tiger 1 enabled us to work in the Green Impact Zone. We did a number of transit projects on both sides of the state line, as well as in Gladstone and Independence. So, I mean, it was truly a regional Tiger grant. I think we just celebrated the grand opening of the Troost pedestrian bridge just outside your station a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
We were very successful with that. We got some Tiger funding for the streetcar to help fund the streetcar extension. There are other discretionary programs that we've worked very hard to get into Kansas City and been successful at.
But again, you can't count on it because it's not steady. You have to apply for it and hopefully win it, right?
Yeah, most of those obviously go for capital projects, the discretionary mm-hmm. programs. What we continue to really have to work for is a growth in our operating budget and our operating revenues.
Michael, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I wanted to add one point on this. We talk about can cities afford to do this. We've been tracking local ballot initiatives across the country for transit initiatives since the year 2000. We're seeing a 70% passage rate year over year.
Wow.
There were 15 ballot initiatives last year, 11 passed, 70% passage rate. The year before, 49 of 62 passed. City after city after city are passing transit ballot initiatives because the communities believe in them and understand we need to make that investment.
Those are interesting numbers to me because, again, a lot of folks are predicting that the vote in Kansas City this year could be a tough one for the streetcar extension south of the river. Lots of dire predictions about the 1 cent sales tax statewide in Missouri if that, in fact, goes on the ballot this November or even at a 0.75 cent level. So, but you're saying it's working across the country. They're succeeding.
The key there, Steve, is to have people that you can hold accountable and have a project you can show. We will deliver these four things. We'll deliver them on these dates, and here's who's responsible for it.
Yeah, Mark Huffer.
Yeah, and Steve, we've certainly seen that locally. This 3.8 cent sales tax increase in 2003 passed by 66%. The renewal passed by 64%. And the TDD for the streetcar passed overwhelmingly. So Kansas Cityans support transit, and they're willing to pay for it. And they want to have that option.
And when those things pass, it's certainly a huge vote of confidence in the future of any city, right? That goes without saying. Okay, back to some phone calls here. Let's go to James from Kansas City, Missouri. James, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing today?
Well, thanks.
Actually, I'm not an original person from here, from Kansas City. I'm from San Diego. I grew up in San Diego.
Okay.
And the same arguments that I'm hearing now are the arguments I heard almost 25, 30 years ago about their trolley system there in San Diego.
And how's it working out there?
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, they got the bonds paid off 10 years early. It goes through the part of the city that the people that normally would need it more than, you know, the people that live in the suburbs that got cars. And it's working great. It's really working great. You can go from – actually, you can actually go from Oxnard, California, all the way to the border on $10.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trolley system and the train system and the bus system from San Diego to Orange County to L.A. up to Oxnard.
All right.
I've done it quite a few times. So if people can get on board – But they got to have this thing going through places where people that use it every day. They can't just have it downtown or north of the river or something like that.
Yeah.
They got to have it where people can go from their house to their job and have spiders coming off the thing. See what I'm saying?
I do, James. Thank you for the call. Alrighty. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Margo here from – oh, I'm sorry. I just lost Margo. Let's go to Lou from Lawrence. Margo, please call back. Lou from Lawrence, you're on up to date.
Okay. I'm naive about this, but without any concerns, I mean, why is KC so late getting on the transportation bandwagon? Other Western cities are way ahead of us.
Now, there's a story, Mark Huffer. I'll give you 30 seconds to summarize it. Yeah, thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Lou.
You know, I think a big part of it is just that we have some issues. We don't have some of the same issues other cities do. We don't have severe congestion. We don't have high-priced parking. We don't have roadways that get blocked up the way some other cities mm-hmm. do. And this town is easy to get around by car. And sometimes it's just the initial inertia. And if we can get off that inertia, build the first streetcar line, I think you're going to see it expanded. Just like the gentleman said about San Diego, you'll see the same phenomenon in Kansas City.
There's a famous remark that will go down in Kansas City history for years to come, Lou, where our former mayor, Emanuel Cleaver, referred to a streetcar light rail line as touristy frou-frou, and that gummed the works up for a number of years and sort of slowed us down, I think. But I appreciate the phone call, Lou. Let's go to Rick from Shawnee. Rick, you're on up to date.
Hi, I just want to know the impact of the widespread deployment of autonomously driven vehicles or autonomously piloted ones, such as the Google car, and how that would affect public transport plans.
Boy, good question. Michael, what are you seeing about driverless cars out there?
What you're going to see first is a continuum there where vehicles talk to each other and talk to the infrastructure around them so we can move cars more efficiently and effectively throughout our communities. And then the next evolutionary step from that will be autonomous vehicles. And when you can have people that maybe have physical challenges that can't get around otherwise, giving them that access brings your community to a more vibrant place, and it'll be a good thing.
Okay. So you don't see it causing a problem. Am I hearing you right, Michael?
It'll be a continuum. They're not going to replace cars. They're not going to replace buses. It'll be, again, as we talked about, another choice that people will have in their community.
Okay. Margo from Smithville. I apologize for cutting you off earlier. Margo, my finger just hit the wrong button. I apologize.
That's no problem. I'm so excited to hear you guys talking about this. And one of the things that people don't talk about are the subsidiary cost savings and adjacent cost savings on things like our gray infrastructure and how much, you know, less maintenance money we can spend on things like roads when we reduce overall traffic and how we can enhance our environmental justice by providing a way for people to get to jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So not often mentioned in the measurements, but a real economic gain for cities.
Margo, I appreciate that. And Mark Huffer, some of her comments, I think make a lot of sense, but the payback, the reduced public funds going into construction of highways, that's still a long way down the road, I imagine.
I don't think public transit is just a part of the mix. It's not going to be competing against roads. It's not going to be replacing roads. It just has to be part of mm-hmm. the overall plan. They have to work together. Your question about autonomous cars, every transit trip begins or ends with a pedestrian movement. You've got to get to the transit line. Those autonomous cars can help you get to a rail station, to help you get to a bus line. That's part of the overall movement. The way that we have to manage mobility is provide choices and integrate and coordinate all those choices.
How do driverless cars help people get to stations for light rail, for instance?
Just that instead of driving, using it from a suburban house to downtown, you might use it from a suburban community to a station and take the train to town.
And they would operate sort of like buses do now.
Exactly.
I gotcha. Okay. Back to some calls here. Let's go to JP from north of the river. JP, good morning.
Good morning. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area and lived in Portland, Oregon for an extended period of time. It works splendidly. But the issue is reliability and once people get used to the fact that they can get to work on time or can come up from Power and Light at a reasonable hour and get back home, it will work and integrate perfectly. It's just a matter of getting it done. And I've lived in these big cities that have it, and it works absolutely wonderful. And that's what I have to say.
JP, thank you. And one of the big issues, Mark Huffer, is getting streetcars north of the river. Lynn Horsley from the newspaper just had a story about that. And it's costly to get those things across the river.
Yeah. Obviously, infrastructure is expensive, whether you're talking about rail or streetcars or bridges or roads. It is expensive. But there is a tremendous return on that investment, less congestion, less pollution. You have to put all that into the equation.
Okay. Let's get one more caller here. Nancy from Kansas City North. Nancy, good morning to you.
Good morning. I just have a quick comment about bus service north of the river. I've noticed that along some of the major bus routes, there are not benches for people to sit on or shelter from the weather. It's just a pole with the bus route number by the side of the road, and I don't think that that's very user-friendly.
We have 6,000 bus stops, and what we have to do is prioritize where those amenities go. We've made major investments on North Oak Corridor, the I-29 corridor, and around Berry Road in terms of sidewalk replacement, bus stops, bus shelters. We have to prioritize where investments go. We cannot have a shelter at all 6,000 stops. But we understand the issue. If there's a specific location that is a problem, please contact us, and we'll try to address it.
Mark from Prairie Village emails us to ask bike racks on streetcars.
Bikes, I believe, will be allowed in the streetcars.
In the streetcar, maybe not.
That,
in front,
that's
like
how
buses.
That's how they do it in other cities.
Okay. What's the main agenda item for your conference here this weekend, Michael?
We're here to celebrate the best of the best. We've got a bus rodeo. We've got competitors from across the country competing. And
a bus? What is that?
It's a competition. They've got to do all kinds of maneuvers and see who can do them. And we've got competitors from all over the U.S. and Canada. And tonight we'll have a big award ceremony for them, awarding the best driver in the country.
What's the toughest trick those bike rodeo drivers have to try to pull off?
They got to put the dual wheels through a set of tennis balls. It's incredible.
Really?
Absolutely.
I'd like to see that. I want to thank Michael Malanafy, President and CEO of the American Public Transportation Association. Have a great conference here, Michael.
Thank you, Steve.
So good to have you. Mark Huffer, General Manager of the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority. Always good to have you too, Mark.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be back.
It.